I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to another bonus episode of Utopia Talks. It's Jaguar here, and this is a bonus episode that I'm so excited to share with you. But before you listen to this, if you haven't already listened to both parts of the Under the Lights documentary, I highly recommend you check those out first. Across both parts of the documentary, we spoke to a lot of queer artists who are absolutely smashing it right now, including Talia, Michelle Minetti, and Jay Ward, who all gave an incredible insight into navigating the music scene as a queer person. So go and give that a listen if you haven't already. All right, recorded live sets can be notoriously an intimidating place for a DJ. Believe me, I've been there. Hateful comments are often seen as part and parcel, and from experience, it's a scary thing to do. A lot of DJs avoid them altogether, but they're increasingly becoming a vital way of making a name for yourself in dance music. With that in mind, today's conversation is with Lagoon Femshema, who in November 2022 became the first ever artist to do a boiler room set in drag. We love it. To see somebody breaking down expectations and doing a set in full drag is just incredible. The set itself is amazing. Lagoon is literally painted bright blue, playing Azealia Banks, playing all these bangers, and the whole thing felt like queer history in the making. I sat down with Lagoon to discuss respect, his boiler room, how he deals with haters, and so much more.
My name is Zooey Gleaves. I also go by Lagoon Femshema. My pronouns are he, him. And I am a DJ, creative director, drag queen, broadcaster, presenter, and will literally do kind of anything else if the coin is cute enough, considering the cost of living crisis we're currently in. But those are my big five, so that's what I do mainly.
Your big five. Love. Also, let's not forget Hun TV as well.
Right, yes.
Personal favourite.
I'm so happy that you ride for that, honestly. My God. TikTok is just a myth and a mystery, but I'm so glad that you like Hun TV. We're doing the X Factor episode rollout. It started today, so stay locked. Watch Hun TV. It's really funny.
For people that don't know, what's Hun TV?
Hun TV is this stupid show that I filmed with my friends over... I mean, we filmed it back in, like, 2021, like, the spring of 2021, and I had the footage for ages and was, like, desperate to put it out. It's basically just a kind of, like, a rewatch show where we kind of look at quintessential classic moments from British culture and just take the piss out of them a little bit, because we love that, you know, it's like that classic camp thing where it's like, we love them so much and we think they're amazing, but they're also a little bit silly. So we did Hollyoaks, specifically John Paul and Craig, which was a very important storyline in my life when I was 13, 14. And we're now on to X Factor. So we're looking at Dawn the Jockey, we're looking at Ab Lisa, and we're looking at Cher Lloyd.
Oh my God.
It's great. It is great. It's so stupid, but it's great. I love it.
Oh my God. I'm living for the X Factor series. Anyway, right, back to this. Okay, so you did your debut boiler room last year, which was iconic, to say the least. Azealia Banks, Licorice. I mean, need I say more?
Yes.
No, it was amazing. Love watching you do that and feel like it's doing good things for you. But can you tell us about that experience, the boiler room?
Sure. I had been DJing since 2019, and then obviously, you know, everything kind of like shut down nightlife-wise pretty much a year after I started. And It was just, it was something that when I started DJing, I had already been doing drag for a number of years. The drag came before the DJing, but when I started, I had always thought like it would be great to be the first drag queen to ever play a boiler room and to kind of like make that a thing. And the time kind of came at the beginning of last year where I kind of like, I felt ready and I kind of wanted to work on something really creatively. And so I reached out to Boiler Room and Amar specifically from Boiler Room, who's really great and really creative and who I'd kind of known for producing some of the most fantastic shows that they've done there. You know, he was involved with Lesbianali, which was that incredible project which they did pre-lockdown with Pussy Palace and Babes. And he was basically super into the idea and was incredibly supportive and basically kind of got together a fantastic sponsor and was basically kind of allowed me to have full creative kind of freedom with the show, from the lineup to how the show would look, set design, the entire thing. He was just very kind of like, he was just very, very supportive, and the entire boardroom team was so supportive. And so, yeah, it came about at the end of last year. I think it was, we did it in October. And it was the dream show. You know, I booked a lineup of DJs who I admire immensely and who I kind of think are the best at what they do. And the lineup was reflective of the nights that I've been going to, the DJs who I love seeing, the music that I like, and the DJs who I kind of, and the way, you know, the kind of the type of DJ that I enjoy seeing. And it was divine. It was a dream come true. It was everything. It was great. I loved it. I'm very, very proud of it.
Good. Yeah, you should be. It was a joy to watch. And you just look like you're having the best time as well. And everyone around you is like fully in it. So those are the best boiler rooms, I think.
Thank you.
And looking at the comments, like overall, it seemed pretty positive. Like you say, like you were doing a boiler room like in drag, which I don't think's really been done before. So overall, I was like, yeah, slay, 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 going through, everyone's like, you're slaying. But then there are a couple negative ones, and I've had a look at them, and like mostly from men, like some people being like, oh, the classic one, oh, you've just got to have a gimmick these days, like it's not about talent. We had Marge Simpson, because you're dressed in blue.
Yeah. the heterosexuality jumped out in the comments. I think that was the takeaway. It was the fact that like, wow, listen, I'm sure there are some straight people who are going to be listening, so I'm not talking about you because you guys are the nice ones, but like the unoriginality and the lack of creativity was just bubbling over. It was like every other person was like, avatar this, avatar that. It's like, let's maybe get to a place where we have other references for things that are blue, maybe outside of Avatar, that might be useful. But yeah, no, some of the comments were hateful, and that's exactly what I would expect. You know, and honestly, I did kind of find them funnier. Like, I got stoned with some friends maybe like a month or two after, so we were just going through them all and laughing because they're just like, it's just so stupid and predictable. But I do understand, you know, I feel like Boiler Room is an institution which has a very kind of tunnel vision, male fan base, and will obviously attract a certain kind of clientele which kind of wants everything very homogenous and very one track, because that's where they feel safe and that's where they feel represented. So I do understand that, but it's like, you know, I'm not even a typical drag queen. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I don't look like regular drag queens. When you Google drag queen, that's not the sort of drag that I do. I do it in a way which isn't by the book, so to speak, or, you know, my makeup isn't the rule book makeup and my outfits aren't the rule book outfits. So it was already kind of coming left of field. And yeah, it's bound to intimidate and rile up people who, you know, don't think that I should have the opportunity. And, you know, that's totally fine because they're wrong. And, you know, it's like, it's all part of this keyboard warrior kind of esque culture where it's like, I doubt any of those people who made those comments would dare come up to me and tell me any of that stuff to my face, because that's like the world we live in now. Do you know what I mean? It's like you're so safe and warm and cozy wrapped up on your kind of gamer chair tapping away at some like drag queen playing dubstep, because you're like, you're fizzing over with fury at the fact that it's not you. And it's like, well, you know, tough tea, sorry about it, but no, it's not you. So deal with it.
Very well said. And also, it shows, like, it's sick. Like, it is, they are just wrong, because, like, your boiler room was incredible. And, like, it just shows that you're doing something cutting edge and different, and these people are scared. And this is the whole thing, like, I've seen with, like, even with this report we put out, like, people didn't like what we had to say about gender inequality. And the people telling us that were men. And, like, you know, and there are some great men out there, but it's these, like, angry ones that sit at home in their gamer chairs, like I've got them sitting one today.
the comfiest chair
they
about,
are good, though.
To be fair.
They are good. But they kind of... It's like when you do something that isn't, like, strictly the canon, it's, like, very... Some people can't process it. But how are you ever meant to evolve and develop if you don't do something differently, right?
It's the great process of unlearning, which we all, in smaller or larger quantities, have to do as human beings, because we are all brought up with a dominant narrative about what is acceptable, what is right, and what the rules are for the society that we live in. And then, you know, when things like your report, like a boiler room featuring a drag queen, like the conversation about race that was very much prevalent, but which kind of exploded into the mainstream via Black Lives Matter in the spring of 2020 happened, is that a process of unlearning occurs where narratives that aren't the dominant are questioned. And if you've lived your entire life thinking one thing and believing one thing so much that it's ingrained into the very fiber and core of your being, and then you see something that is, or read something that is contradictory to that, you're going to feel irked, and you're going to feel challenged, and you're going to feel uneasy, because the information that is true that's being presented to you is dissolving everything that you hold. Like, the fabric of your world is, like, dissolving. The question is, how do you then respond to that? It's like, do you get angry? Do you keyboard warrior? Do you go on the attack and go on the offensive and stamp your foot and bury your head in the sand? Or do you let the information wash over you and slowly kind of figure out a way to incorporate it into how you live your life? Like, that's the difference. But, like, I know what me and what my community do and will continue to do. And, you know, I think what you've done with this report is so great, because even though, yeah, you're going to have to deal with, you know, not rightly, but you're going to have to deal with people who are aggy and are on the attack, it's like, actually, in a very kind of calm, cool, considered way, what you've done is just present people information. And that's really, really important.
Thank you, babes.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, "I'd rather fall over than listen to this yeah. shit," and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, "Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?"
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Back to, like, Boiler Room as a platform and, like, seeing comments like that, do you think platforms who post sets, like, have a duty to moderate and go back to those comments? Because actually, me and Katie were talking about this, about when we put up the report out, we had it on quite a few platforms, and on social media specifically, people would then be letting us know what they thought, some in not very nice ways. And I actually went back to every single one and I was like, "Oh, but have you actually read the report?" And I'd link them to the website of my, you know, with good-willed intent, but a bit of sass as well. But do you think the platforms should do more to moderate that?
You know, it's a really hard one because, you know, I'm not in favour of censorship. I don't think censorship should be a thing. You know, I think if we want to live in a world which has a dialogue and that has, you know, free speech, even if we disagree with what that person has to say. So I think that's something that we need to still hold dear. But at the same time, you know, I'm lucky because I have a community and a support network, and also I'm confident in myself and who I am and my vision, and the comments didn't really get to me. But you know, I'm lucky in that way. In the same way I imagine you are, you know, kind of putting out this report and having loads of criticism thrown at you. It's like, I can imagine that even though it might have been hurtful, you weren't necessarily rocked by that, and it didn't kind of, you know, the fact that you were able to kind of respond to those people in a cool, calm, considered way, it's like, you know, that's amazing. But I am aware that some people maybe don't have that framework, and those comments and that hatred might be a lot more insidious. In terms of, I think Boiler Room, to be fair, with some of the comments, I think Boiler Room did moderate some of them. I think, you know, I'm also very lucky because I have been a recipient of negative comments, but I've never been a recipient of violence in the comments. And I know that women specifically are targets of violence and hate speech in comments a lot more frequently. You know, threats to them, taunting, bullying, kind of like multiple accounts being made to slide into people's DMs to kind of like send them hatred. It's like, I think that's when we need to look at it and kind of like reevaluate. But, you know, I think there has to be, honestly, I'm unsure. I think there has to be more of a dialogue about it. I think maybe the helpful thing is to kind of speak about it more openly. And also, like, a culture of shame, maybe. It's like, what would your mum say if she knew that you were kind of, like, sending messages like that to strangers on the internet? Like, that's a bizarre thing to do. It's like, maybe bringing back shame will be helpful as a deterrent. But in what form that would take, I don't know. Because these people are invisible, is the thing. It's like, really, how do you moderate somebody who hides away on the internet? It's like, it's tough. You remove one comment from one account, they can just make a new email and post up another. Yeah. But I think dialogue is key and crucial.
That's a really good point. I mean, it's literally like the Wild West out there on the internet, isn't it?
I know. I don't even have Twitter. I avoid it completely because I just...
That's wise.
From what I've heard, it's just like, that just sounds nasty.
Yeah, I wouldn't go there. No. All right, well, I want to ask you about appearance and like presenting. So in the report, we talked to a lot of women and non-binary people about, a lot of them, interestingly, said that they prefer to dress androgynously just so they're not at the, like, they're not the subject of the male gaze, mm-hmm. and people aren't going to comment, oh, she's just there because she's pretty, or, oh, because she's got a little dress on, or, I've seen some horrible comments about that, and... Mm. But what I really wanted to talk to you about is, I love that you're fully like embracing and dressing up in this gorgeous drag when you're playing as Lagoon, Femme Shema. And I want to ask, do you ever feel vulnerable expressing your gender identity? Or does it empower you?
You know, or what? Both? It's literally, it's both down the middle, you know. Dressing in drag does make you more vulnerable. It does. You know, that's why if ever I'm DJing in drag, I make sure that I, as part of kind of like the Thea and the Rider and whatever, and I would kind of suggest this to other drag queens, point blank period, and other kind of like people who consider themselves vulnerable who work in nightlife, is to figure out a way to make sure that your travel is covered from A to B. Because, yeah, you know, you are vulnerable if you're in drag. You are at a, because you are kind of like a, you're kind of like a vocal point. And I've had things said to me on the street. I've had, I remember I was once getting money out at a cash point. It was called a faggot at a cash point. I've had, the main thing is actually having Uber drivers immediately cancel rides.
No.
Yeah, immediately cancel rides when they see you. Which, to be fair, I don't want to take entirely personally, because they're probably like, I don't want my seats stained blue. So I do partially understand it, but it is also homophobia. So it's like half and half. Like, I do kind of, but it's like homophobia with a reason. I don't know. I'm just kidding. But what I will say is that for me, the most gratifying thing is the image. That's what overrides everything else, is that moment in the club where you're looking at this person who doesn't look like they're from planet Earth playing you this music. It invigorates an environment in a way that I find kind of endlessly inspiring. And there is no, you know, there's no better way to empower yourself and to make yourself feel invincible than through dress, you know. It's like, that's what it's there for. It's like, and you can do anything you want with it. And it's so funny, I was speaking to my friend Annie Lord, who is this fantastic writer, the other day on the radio, and she was saying, you know, her and her friends are dressing more sparingly than ever before. And they're doing it for themselves, and they're doing it specifically for the kind of like, so for like the adulation of their other kind of girlfriends, and then also gay men and straight men they're not even being thought about in the process when they, and you know, these, you know, they're in their poster girl sort of like tight bodycon, like nothing on, kind of like bralette Nancy DeJarka kind of knockoff from wherever, like, and they're like fully, they're like, these are women in their kind of like late 20s, but like fully kind of obsessed with the idea of dressing as sexually and sexily as possible, to then go out and not even speak to a man and not have sex. So I think it's like, great. I think it's a sliding scale. But yeah, no, it's weird. It is that, that kind of mixture between vulnerability and like total kind of untouchability and empowerment.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And I think as well, like safety, as you were talking about, like, again, that's something we really talked about in the report. And I think that's a really good point, is like travel, make sure, it's just, again, it's like so sad you have to think about this, but it's like just making sure you can get home safely and get to the club without any trouble. It's just,
yeah. It is. It's hard. And, you know, like, I've played a lot of, you know, I started my DJ career and drag career, actually, and in mixed spaces. Like, I didn't start in safe spaces, and I started clubbing at the same time as safe space culture, but like not in safe spaces. And so there were a lot of times where I did feel like I was just being gawked at or the butt of the joke to kind of like a crowd of people. And that's really hard because it makes it, it can make doing it feel very off-putting. And so I think, you know, now more and more and more, I'm kind of only trying to be in drag when I'm assured that the environment I'm doing it in will be an empowering one. Like, I refuse to be the butt of somebody's joke. Like, that's just not going to happen. So I'm only really doing drag now where I feel like I'm, where I feel like I am respected. And the moment the respect is gone, I'm out of there. Like, I just won't participate.
Yeah, good for you. What is the biggest progress that you have seen during your career so far?
Nightlife, in a way, I think, is like a barometer for the world, like, or where we are societally, you know, because nightlife is the place where everything starts. Like, nightlife is like the Big Bang, so to speak. It's like club culture is where every single kind of progressive thing has kind of happened or at least taken place, you know, be it in fashion, in music, in art. It's like, this is where the forward thinkers go after a hard day working in their horrible jobs that they hate to kind of like talk about the ideas that excite them and make them feel good about the world. And the way nightlife has progressed since I got involved with it back in 2016 is remarkable, you know, and there is a dialogue that didn't exist when I started, which is now fully there. And you, I'm slowly kind of seeing a newer generation of kids who have kind of like come up in the world that was created by the people before. And these are just the norms. This is just the status quo. And it is having a trickle down effect. And I think that's in everything. I think it's in conversations to do with race. I think it's in conversations to do with sexuality and gender. People are a lot more open-minded because, oh God, it's going to sound so corny and so cheesy, but because music is a unifying thing, because music ties people together, people are seeing where the music comes from. And it might not be somebody who they initially identify with or feel like they have commonality with, but because of the environment that they're in and because of the music that they're hearing, acceptance like seeps into them and their brain chemistry changes to allow different narratives and different opinions and different life experiences just become the norm. And it calms people. It makes people more open-minded via osmosis. And I have seen that more and more and more. This is a change that is happening. It does feel different to when I started. So, you know, the work is not done by any stretch, but nightlife's kind of like positive effect is being felt, I think, throughout the country, kind of like throughout the world. We are getting there, for sure.
Yeah, love that. Also, I love the, you said nightlife is like the Big Bang. I'm like, abso-fucking-lutely, that's great.
That's what I mean, though.
Like that.
Yeah, just like across the, it's just like across the board. Like, I think about it all the time. It's just like, you know, you think about everything from like Studio 54 to like the drag balls and the Harlem Renaissance in the 1920s. It's like the nightclub has always been the place for the most exciting culture. It's just, there's no question. And that continues to this day.
Yeah, nice. All right, final question. We ask everyone this on the podcast. What is your utopia?
My utopia is a kind of a shared, it's kind of like a neighborhood where all my friends and family live. Everybody lives comfortably and happily and without stress. There is a city where you can go and play, but it's at a safe distance. And when you're not interacting with it or playing music in it or doing whatever, you come back to this neighborhood and you cook and relax and do a double bill of like crazy white woman thriller murder movies, and you like smoke some weed and you eat some roast chicken and you kind of like bask in like the calmness of the place, and it's beautiful and green and verdant, and you get to kind of sleep until like 9, 10 most days because work doesn't start until midday. That's probably my utopia.
Wow. I mean, can we go there now, please?
Because I don't feel like that. It's that hard to achieve either. I feel like we're just like a couple steps away from it. Like it's not, you know, out of reach.
We're nearly there. All right. Well, I'll meet you in your utopia because that sounds gorgeous.
Can't wait.
What a gem, Lagunas. And thank you so much for joining me on this bonus episode of Utopia Talks. We'll be back with new Utopia Talks content very soon. But in the meantime, there's loads of episodes for you to dive into featuring the likes of Sherelle, Fat Tony, Jada G, Marianne Hobbs, so many more. So have a scroll through and let me know what you think at Jaguar Worldwide. Big love always to Kay Backed, aka Katie Baxter, on the production. And I'll see you guys soon.
Utopia Talks is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, mate.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.